Okay, I am speaking with Adam Bellow, who is a well-known editor. He's done a lot of conservative bestsellers by people like Sarah Palin and Jonah Goldberg and Dinesh D'Souza. He is currently an editor at St. Martin's, and he has his own imprint there called All Points. And he is also the creator of the website Liberty Island. Now, Adam, I'd like to talk to you about both of those things, but I'd like to start with Liberty Island, which is a couple years old, but you just relaunched it and you have a new look to the website. So tell me what Liberty Island is, its concept, and about the relaunch.
Well, about 4 or 5 years ago, first of all, I'll say that I've been a nonfiction editor in the on the right in the conservative intellectual world for 30 years. And I never published a novel in my whole career, but several years ago, I noticed that a lot of my nonfiction authors were telling me that they were asking me whether I would be interested in publishing a novel, or they wanted to write novels, and I kept hearing this, and I read some of these books, and I considered publishing a couple of them in the commercial mainstream publishing houses where I was working, but the feeling was that they were too sectarian, that the audience for these books written by conservatives would not be a broad mass market, and so it was not considered to be a good idea, part of our business. It just didn't fit into our business model as publishers. So together with my friend and partner, David Bernstein, we launched Liberty Island Magazine. The website is libertyislandmag.com. And the magazine was at first simply a magazine, a digital magazine for short works by right-leaning authors, conservatives, libertarian, anyone concerned with the fate and future of freedom, and we published a lot of great stuff. It was really fun. We got a lot of wonderful material, which we posted on our website. But soon after launching it, we began to receive queries about novels. Were we prepared to publish novels? And so we started soliciting submissions of novel length. And again, although there was a lot of stuff that that wasn't up to our standards as editors, there was a tremendous amount of good quality material in a wide range of fiction genres, ranging from the literary to what we call genre fiction, which includes science fiction, fantasy, thrillers, historical, romance, and other genre categories. And so we started publishing novels, and but we had some difficulties with distribution, and just sort of with very little money, we were operating on a shoestring, and it's hard to put books into physical distribution or even digital distribution. So we went through a couple of distributors, and then finally we decided to take on distribution ourselves and just handle it directly, which is a much more satisfactory arrangement because you have better control over schedules and timing and so forth. And we redesigned our website, relaunched it, and we're about to roll out a large number of new titles in a variety of genres, and we're extremely proud of the books that we've selected, and have every expectation that they will find their natural readership.
Yes, I find it interesting that, I often hear from conservatives, well, the left owns the popular culture, they own Hollywood, they own academia, they own publishing. And I say, well, there's this place called Liberty Island, where they're actually trying to establish a toehold there. And it's almost like punk rock in the early days, where a bunch of guys are in their basement and they, you know, create, you know, Rough Trade or Creation Records. The point being that for a lot of conservatives that are complaining about this, it takes a competition to bring out the best talent. And B, I think Liberty Island is doing that. I mean, isn't that sort of your model, that, you know, the competition is producing better books, and it's also there's a market there for these on the right. People just sort of have to know about it. Am I on the right track there?
Well, you know, our idea, the punk rock analogy is actually a good one. You know, a couple of summers ago, I published an article in the National Review announcing essentially our discovery that the that creative energy had shifted on the right into the production of popular culture, and it was not limited to popular fiction, but also includes video and music and stand-up comedy and a whole range of pop culture varieties that are reflected in the mainstream culture. But as we conservatives know, conservative viewpoints are not welcome in mainstream culture. And so a lot of so the conclusion of, you know, of my article, my argument is that there is a new counterculture arising in opposition to the increasingly rigid and politically correct control of mainstream popular culture. And we at Liberty Island wished to support and promote and give voice to that counterculture. And we called upon our fellow conservatives to support those creative individuals who are laboring in, you know, for the most part, total obscurity, with very little encouragement or support. And, you know, we, as editors and publishers, are very moved by the persistence and tenacity and commitment of these creative individuals, and we think it's perfectly appropriate to call upon conservatives to give them support. Now, the response to my article was interesting because from the left, there were howls of derision and laughter. You know, what, conservatives, you know, write novels, using what, or, you know, a rock, a lump of coal. You know, you can imagine what kind of, you know, hilarity ensued, because to the left, the idea that a conservative could have a creative impulse is laughable on its face. What I found interesting on the right, however, was a certain sort of you know, reluctance to endorse the idea of what we were calling conservative fiction. What does that mean? You know, does that mean that we're going to be publishing novels, you know, endorsing, you know, where Donald Trump is a hero, or, you know, or about particular, you know, conservative policies, or partisan books, and you know, and should not culture also be free of any political message or intention, and be somehow aesthetically pure or superior? And so, you know, there's a certain kind of cultural snobism that you see on the right sometimes, a kind of Parnassian snobbery, which is to say, oh, that's, you know, that's nice. Get back to us. Come back to us when you discover the conservative Faulkner, you know, or Melville. And, you know, our response to that is, what's wrong with, you know, Tom Wolfe or Tom Clancy? We're not talking about high literature, which we agree, you know, should stand on its own aesthetic merits. Although I would also point out that great literary works are often, in fact, usually political in some way, going back to the Aeneid, for example, which was commissioned by Augustus to glorify the founding of Rome, or even farther back, the works of Sophocles, which were open political commentary on the reign of Pericles,
or Robert Heinlein.
Coming more to the future. In the 20th century, there's no question that particularly genres like science fiction have been political. Brave New World, 1984, the utopia, dystopia, wonderful. Many wonderful books have been Fahrenheit 451. Many wonderful books have been published that have a political message and that still manage to be popular and entertaining, and that is what we're looking at. Now, when you come to the question of, the relationship of, let's say, how do aesthetic and cultural movements get launched and get started, they often start, as you know, I've cited, the example of punk rock or, grunge rock or blues or any number of other musical genres. These movements start in small arenas, like the Cavern Club in Liverpool, let's say, and they attract an initial band of enthusiasts who are the first fans and supporters of the new musical thing, and they provide support to these artists as they hone their craft and develop their sound and style. And then, if they're really good, they break out of that original supportive environment and become national and even global. And that is also true of writers as well. And if you think about, a good example is Tom Clancy, who wrote novels that were not explicitly political or conservative, but were clearly written with a kind of conservative, pro-American, patriotic outlook. And Clancy's books initially could not be published in the mainstream publishing houses, and he was first published by the Naval Institute Press, which, judging by its name, I'm sure you can imagine the kind of thing they published. But they published Tom Clancy, who became a big success to them. And after he was established as an author with a large audience, then he was able to move to a mainstream publishing company. And that's the model for Liberty Island. We think of Liberty Island as the bottom rung of a feeder system that doesn't exist. That needed to be created in order to allow first-time authors and self-published authors whose views are unfashionable and who could not be published by left-leaning or liberal mainstream houses to be published and to find an audience and to build some kind of a base of support so that they can then go on to be more successful according as their talents warrant. So that is our ethos as publishers.
Have you thought about asking Kanye West to be on your board of directors?
It's a great idea. Do you have his email?
No, but I know he's on Twitter, so.
Yeah. Does he read? That is the other question.
He raps, so he's good with language. I know that.
Yeah.
So if someone listening to this said, okay, I want to go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and I want to order, two or three Liberty Island books to give this a shot, what are, two or three titles that you can think of that would be a good place for someone to start off?
Well, we're rolling a lot of content this year. Every month we're publishing a new novel or a new series of novels. We started releasing whole series together in batches. In the single novel category, we have a book by Frank J. Fleming, who is a writer, a humorist with a following, a writer for Pajamas Media. And we published a previous book by Frank. This is his new one. It's called Side Quest in Realms Ungoogled. It's described as an urban fantasy. And it's a fantasy novel about a computer coder who is taking an unusual route to work one day and finds himself in an enchanted forest where fairies approach and give him a sword and tell him, you know, you learn to use this sword or perish. But he's too busy, he has to get to work, so he goes to work instead. But then he begins to notice some strange things, like the fact that his boss is a demon with horns and fangs, or that an unnamed thing below feasts on human victims in an arena filled with people absorbed in their cell phones. And then he goes on a date with a blonde girl named Shannon, and she's wearing a full suit of armor and carrying an axe, and she explains that she belongs, that she's a sister of torment, and she cuts off heads. And so they, you know, for the darkness. And no one thinks there's anything funny about this. You know, it's sort of, it's like nothing out of the ordinary. But he's beginning to see more and more the world as it is. And he goes on an adventure and has to make, important choices. And it's a sort of classic, light versus dark fantasy story, but it's written, Frank is a wonderful writer, it's very funny, and it's a terrific story. And that book is doing quite well for us.
Can you repeat the title for me?
Yes, it's called Side Quest.
Side Quest.
The title is Side Quest by Frank Fleming. And this is available on Amazon. Now we have a 5-book series called Bad Road Rising by Mike Barron. Mike Barron is an author, a very successful author of graphic novels. And in recent years, he's turned to writing fiction. And he has a series of books about a private eye named Josh Pratt. Josh Pratt had been a member of a bike gang and meth dealer, went to prison, had a religious experience, and came out as a better man. And in all of his adventures, in each of these novels, he has a he has a different problem that he has to solve for somebody, and it usually involves is getting embroiled in some kind of mess with some bad bikers and also with some liberals, because he lives in Madison, Wisconsin, naturally, and is constantly dealing with sort of liberal folly. What I like about these books, apart from the fact that they're just really excellent sort of Chandler-esque novels, well-written that tell good stories, they're just sort of implicitly, the conservatism is just implicit. No one ever gives a lecture in any of these books. It's not like reading, Ayn Rand. These are just excellent stories with a very sympathetic character. We really care, and they're page-turning books. So highly recommended. So that's the Bad Road Rising series. I think there are 5 books in the series currently. In addition, there's a series of a trilogy by Quinn Hillier, who is well known to readers of National Review. The series is called The Accidental Prophet, and it's the adventures of someone named Madison Jones, or Mad Jones, who suffers a tragedy in his life, has a kind of religious sort of Martin Luther type experience, stays up all night writing a bunch of religious theses and nails them to the church doors. It's as though Luther lived in the age of Twitter, Jones Jones becomes quickly the center of a cult, and it's hilarious and but theologically serious book. Again, it's in three parts. Really fun read. Another trilogy that we're actually, I think it's a four, now going to be a four-part series by Roy Griffiths, one of our favorite authors and a genuine discovery. Roy Griffiths is a Coast Guard rescue swimmer in San Francisco, and a conservative with a, I think, a touch of the prepper in him. A really great guy. Everybody just sort of likes him personally. And he's written a series of books set in an alternate American present in which the U.S. Fell in 2008 to a combined assault of jihadi invaders from the south and Chinese invaders from the east. And this is in 2008, the last year of George W. Bush's presidency, and Bush goes into hiding and directs where he directs the resistance, and it becomes known as Lonesome George. So these are the Lonesome George Chronicles, and in every volume, you meet there are various groups of resistance fighters around the country. There's various subplots that go through the series. There's one set in the wreckage of Washington, D.C., another in the American Southwest, another in Southern California. One of the things that I particularly enjoy about this book is that the author has incorporated some real-life characters in it with alternate futures. So one of the leading figures in the book is the actor Alec Baldwin, who everybody knows is a massive liberal. But in this book, Baldwin is one of these liberals who has his eyes opened after L.A. is nuked by the Chinese, and his wife and daughter are killed, and he becomes a leader of the resistance. Another real life figure who is included in this series is the late Molly Ivins, a well-known liberal columnist from Texas, who in real life died of cancer in the 90s, but in the novel survives and again, witnesses the invasion of America, the fall of America, has her eyes opened to the jihad, the nature of the jihadist threat, and becomes the voice of the resistance on the underground radio. So it's touches like these that make the book enjoyable, particularly enjoyable for a conservative, and I would say not objectionable to a liberal, which is the whole idea. We don't want to publish conservative books that are offensive to liberals. There's the need for that. We want to entertain them and get them to maybe think a little bit differently from the way they have been used to doing. Storytelling is the best way.
It is. And, one of my favorite writers in the world is Meg Wolitzer, who wrote The Interestings, and she has this new book out called The Female Persuasion. And a lot of people have been saying, well, The Female Persuasion is about feminism and liberals are going to like this book. But her book, The Interestings, was about human beings. It was about how interesting people are as they get older and their friendships and their relationships and their struggles. And I'm going to read The Female Persuasion because I think she's going to have some interesting characters in there. It's the same reason why I'm going to read Liberty Island books, because there will be interesting characters in there. Is that right?
Yes. These are accomplished works of fiction. And, we set a pretty high standard. We get a lot of stuff. We read dozens of novels every year, and the majority we have to turn down because just as readers, we just don't think they're of good enough quality. But the wonderful thing about what we do is that we're in a position to make discoveries and to, which is what publishers always want to do. Publishers want to publish books that they love. You know, you could sit in your, I mean, I'm sitting right now at my New York publishing office, and I get offered books every day, four or five times a day. Someone sends me a proposal or a manuscript or calls me up, pitches a book. And, you know, it will be easy to fill up your list with books that are perfectly fine, perfectly viable, books that, you know, certainly have an audience. But that's not how we operate as editors. The way we operate is that we only choose books to the extent that we are able to do so, unless we're publishing, you know, crossword puzzle books or Sudoku books, which is, you know, not what we went to college to do, but let's say, you know, you're publishing, you know, popular fiction or children's literature or as I do political nonfiction. You choose to publish books that you love and, you know, that you feel have you know, you resonate with and you think other people will love as well. That's what publishing thrives on. And the enthusiasm of editors and their conviction and their commitment to certain writers and books. So in our work at Liberty, we uphold the same standard, and we've been very gratified to discover that there is a tremendous amount of good stuff being published, written and mostly self-published by people who simply deserve a larger audience, and that is our role. And I've only touched upon a few of the titles that we're publishing. I think we have something like 30 books coming out this year, all told. And so it's a cornucopia. It's an embarrassment of riches. And we couldn't be prouder of our writers and of our staff and of all the work that has gone into trying to demonstrate the truth of our proposition that conservatives can write compelling works of fiction that deserve a broad audience.
That's a great place to wind up. I want to thank you for talking to me. Hang on the phone for 1 second. I want to talk to you after I stop recording, but I wanted to thank you for taking the time. It's Liberty Island, and the website again is libertyislandmag.org. .com. LibertyIslandMag.com. A lot of great stuff there. Check it out. Adam, hang on 1 second, and I'm going to talk to you in a second, but thanks for talking to me.
My pleasure. Thank you, Mark.